Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, I'm Andy Murray, and you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Tennis Podcast, brought to you in association with The Telegraph, represented by Mr. Tennis Correspondent Simon Briggs.
I'm waiting for the Federer question.
Well, since you ask, Simon, we'll just hold on to that. He's referring to the fact that he made a prediction and he's been living with it ever since about how Roger Federer would lose heavily against Thomas Berdych. It didn't happen, did it? But anyway, we'll get to that. Catherine Whittaker is also here from Eurosport, our partners for the Australian Open and rights holders for the tournament. Catherine, how's your day been?
Well, never a greater contrast in quality of predictions could there be?
Oh yeah, we're getting a bit arrogant now, are we? What have you said?
Well, didn't I say last night that Nadal would be pushed but eventually win?
Yeah, you did say that. Didn't you also say that Angelique Kerber would lose?
I did a bit, yeah.
It's a good job I'm here, really, isn't it?
yeah, maybe. Well, that was my... Yeah, okay, moving on.
Moving on, yeah, okay. So, today, we've just seen Nadal, and he was pushed. My goodness, what a match. Five sets against Alexander Zverev. I mean, it really was Battle of the Generation stuff, wasn't it, Simon? But eventually, what amused me was the fact that he had a 37-stroke rally in the fifth set, which he lost, and Nadal looked devastated having lost it. And then when you looked up at his player box, they were all saying, no, look at him. Look at what you've just done to him. He can barely walk.
It was a bit savage. I mean, there are some people in this media centre who believe that there's a problem with five-set tennis in that it doesn't actually mean the best player wins all the time. Let's be honest. Pure tennis, Rafa was not the best player out there, but he's, what, 29? He's 30, is he now? 30 now. So he's built up this kind of... Trainers talk about building the house of your kind of aerobic fitness. He's built it up over so many years. Zverev is still, you know, putting the foundations down. And that's what made the difference. And it was brutal at the end.
Yeah, it was brutal. He is exciting. I haven't watched that much of Alexander Zverev. I've seen pockets of his matches. This is the first time I've commentated on one. Five sets, 4 hours. I found his maturity astounding. He's 19 and he just looked like he belonged.
Oh, he feels he belongs. You know, he looked like he belongs because he thinks he belongs. And he does belong. I do believe he's a future world number one. I really do. I think, you know, that's a couple of years away maybe. But, you know, I saw him striding around the corridors in the players' area about, probably would have been about an hour and a half before he ended up taking to the court, but would have been sort of starting his, you know, the couple of matches before him, and he would have been having to warm up in intervals. And he... I really mean striding. He looked so cool, too cool for a 19-year-old. No 19-year-old should be that cool, calm and collected with that sort of thing ahead of him. But, you know, that's what differentiates the future world number ones from the future sort of quite good but not quite there players. So, I think if that match were played in a year's time, Zverev would win it, but... That's the beauty of tennis, isn't it? That it's not just about the best tennis. It's about the physical. It's about the mental. It's about the experience. It is, I believe, the most in the greatest sport because it incorporates all of those factors to the nth degree.
Do you know, I've just had a bit of a flashback. I'm going to do a bit of a horrific name drop here. A flashback to Basel, 1998, the second professional match of Roger Federer's career. I was in Basel, and I was sitting watching Roger Federer's... I was watching his match, and then after it, his second professional match was against Andre Agassi, right? And... I'd never seen him play a full match before, and there was obviously a lot of hype. And Agassi ended up, I think, winning 6-3, 6-2. And the next round, he faced another young Swiss player called Ivo Heuberger, right, who probably only ever got to about 100 in the world. But there was a lot of talk, obviously, in Switzerland. And the inevitable question was, Andre, which one of these two players is going to go the furthest in their career? And he said, if those two players play each other now, Heuberger gets the win. 19 years of age, Federer's 16. But Federer will have the bigger career. You know, and he was right. Lo and behold. But you know, it is interesting to see a player, a sort of junior, turning into a senior, isn't it? I mean, a guy like Nadal was never a junior. He didn't have a junior career. He just started playing tour events. I mean, he looked like a man so early on, you know, and he had that physique, but It was, I think Catherine's absolutely right. You can see this kind of passing of the generations, that one's going one way ever so slowly and the other one's going the other way at some rate.
Well, physically, the comparison, I think, is actually with Murray because, for one thing, Zverev has got Jez Green working with him, who's Murray's physical trainer. Also has Patricio Appe as his agent, who was Murray's agent at that age. But I'm talking more about the sort of coltish long physique. He's bigger than Murray. He has a bigger game than Murray. He has a lot more cockiness and arrogance than Murray had, I would say.
I would agree with you. I mean, I think Murray had a slightly self-conscious look to him, although he had that obdurate, I'll pick a fight in an empty room kind of attitude. There wasn't this sort of swagger. I mean, you can see Zverev loves the limelight. He loves it. He was lapping it up at the end.
Yeah, and we spoke to him in this very room where we're doing the podcast a year ago. And I remember talking to Dominic Thiem. I think I may have said this in the podcast before. Talked to Dominic Thiem, Zverev the same day. And one of them was like 4 years younger than the other or something. And you would have thought it was the other way around because one of them was sort of shy and a bit sort of uncomfortable. And the other one was lolling back in his armchair like he was on Parkinson. So it was like a complete different experience.
Indeed. What's your assessment now of where Nadal is? I mean, for me, I think there were still some wobbles in that match. I think, you know, he was pushed by a guy for a start. He was made to feel stressed. And there were moments when I felt like the forehand wasn't as devastating and consistently strong as he would have wanted to. It wobbled a bit. But the big thing that he seemed to take out of it in the post-match interview with Jim Courier on court was the fact that he'd finally won another five-set match at a slam. He'd lost three in a row. He'd lost to Fabio Fognini at the US Open. He'd lost to Fernando Verdasco here a year ago. Then he'd lost to Luca Pui at the US Open. He got this one done.
Yes, I think that is significant. I think he's in a better place than he has been for some time. I don't think he's going to win this. Having said that, he's in the right half of the draw to win this, or certainly go deep, maybe even reach the final. Things are shaping up well for him, but it's more encouraging. Everything Carlos Moya said yesterday in the interview you did with him encourages me. I see strides being made on the court. The sort of caveat you put in there about the forehand, it's not really a caveat, is it? Because Rafa, without the penetration on the forehand, isn't quite Rafa. And yes, it's a bit better than it has been, but it's such fine margins with him. With the spin he puts on the ball, the difference between, you know, a few inches of depth is the difference between a ball sitting up beautifully for an opponent to hit a winner on and a ball completely out of reach or, you know, rearing up horribly for the opponent. So, yeah, I'm encouraged. I'm pleased to see him going in the right direction again. I don't think he's going to win the title here.
Okay. What do you think?
Yeah, when are we going to come back to Federer? I want to get that over with. But before I say that, Raonic, to me, looks like the finalist from that half of the draw. And I just saw the end of his match against Simon. And every time I see him, he just looks more and more comfortable on the baseline. I mean, I know he needs to be good at the net, because if he doesn't come forward, that takes something away from him. But he just seems to, like, he was slicing and he just looked comfortable. He just, every time you look at him, you just think, oh, he's got a little bit better again.
And he also, talking about somebody who looks the part, he looks the part of a top five seed. He's the third seed now. That doesn't seem to daunt him at all. It's like he expects to go to that seeding, from what I can see. Gael Monfils is the next opponent of Nadal. What do you think?
I mean, I cast my mind back to New York last year when we were faced with a similar sort of Gael Monfils up against a top, well, a significantly more top seed in Novak Djokovic, and we were predicting great things, and he'd played so well up till that point, and then it was possibly one of the most bizarre matches of all time. Nadal now is not Djokovic in New York, but it still leaves me with a sort of grain of what on earth are we going to get from Gael Monfils in this match. I don't know. I think it's not groundbreaking to say if Gael Monfils plays his very best, he can win that match. I think the last time they met was the Monte Carlo final last year, which I watched live, and Monfils had significantly... He could have won it.
You were there, weren't you?
I was there, yeah. I was there. It was an extraordinary match, and one interpretation would be that Monfils sort of threw it away, really. But it was clay, it was France, it was different. I don't know what's going to happen in that one. How can you possibly predict Gael Monfils? I mean, he's unpredictable.
I'm going to go with Nadal. What are you going to go with?
Nadal, yeah, I think so. I mean, the forehand wasn't all it could have been tonight, but he's going to feel pretty good, I think, when he wakes up, and he's not necessarily going to feel too many physical after effects because he's a beast.
So let's get it over with then. What happened with Federer and Berdych?
Well, I did say before that Federer scrambles my brain because I'm used to players being predictable on the basis of their results. You know, you can draw graphs that don't spike all over the place. And then you look at Roger and his goes bananas. He goes in all directions. I mean, he said that he hadn't been all that great in his first few matches against qualifiers. And then I think this was, I have used the phrase in the paper, not yesterday, but when he beat Andy in the 2015 Wimbledon semi-final, it was an act of Roger. It was just breathtaking. And Berdych did... as you told me he would do, he backed off, put his head down, and looked sheepish in the corner.
Did I say that? Yeah, I did say that.
I paraphrase.
Yeah.
We can forgive Simon because I so love the phrase, act of Roger. That's wonderful.
You forgive him just because he's got a fancy phrase?
Yeah, well, I mean, my brother, as we know, is the world's biggest Federer fan, and he just sent me one text at the end of that match last night, just said... God mode is back. So, yeah, active Roger, I think, fits in with that narrative.
Talking of inspirational tennis players, Denis Istomin won today. Backing up his Novak Djokovic big shock in the previous round. I found that quite nice to see that he didn't, you know, usually they get the win of the life and they just disappear.
Yeah, although he did win in five. He's going to play Dimitrov or Gasquet today. And I have a little story to tell you, which I'm extremely proud of, being a saddo, that today I was jogging in the park and somebody shouted out at me. And tonight it was Danny Valverde and Grigor Dimitrov walking along in a pair of caps. So they were virtually unidentifiable. They were in kind of totally in disguise, camouflage mode. And they saw me running in the park. It was actually, for a minute, I felt quite cool that I was like hanging with the big boys, but didn't last.
Oh, dear. So Simon Briggs talking about, yeah, Grigor Dimitrov and Richard Gasquet, which is the evening session match here. That's a result we will bring you tomorrow in the show. It's going to be interesting to see who comes through that part of the draw. Now, what else happened in the men's draw? I can't even remember who else won. Oh, yeah, Roberto Bautista got an outlasting victory over David Ferrer. I mean, fair enough. That is a good win, isn't it?
Yeah, you're going to ask me. I didn't see it because there was so much. I mean, I saw the odd point here and there. It was on in the Eurosport green room because the Spanish were obviously wanting to keep across it. But it was at that time when Rafa was on it. You know, there was just so much going on. And Yeah, that's a big win. I mean, I know a win over Ferrer is becoming less significant.
Yeah, he's not quite what he was, is he?
Yeah, he's not. I think that's probably something the tennis world now is coming to terms with, that he's not what he once was.
Oh, well. Now, the women's draw saw a quite spectacular win for Johanna Konta, didn't it? And we'll get on to Konta in a moment. First of all, Serena Williams, very straightforward against Nicole Gibbs. She's just brushing people aside now.
Well, she's brushing Nicole Gibbs aside, which...
Well, she's brushed everybody else aside. Who's given her a test so far? Lucy Safarova, former French Open finalist? No. Belinda Bencic? No. Now Nicole Gibbs? No.
Yeah, but there are significant caveats to all of that. Look, she's looked great.
What are these caveats?
She's looked great, but I don't think she's been tested in the way that I think Jo Konta will make it to that quarterfinal. I think Serena will too, and I think Jo Konta will at least test her significantly.
Oh, that's the vaguest prediction of all time. Will she win, Catherine Whittaker?
Oh, that's really brutal. Oh, I've predicted Serena to reach to win the tournament, so I can't now predict that Jo Konta will beat her in the quarterfinals. But I'm becoming increasingly convinced that she could.
And will take really her to three could. Sets.
Oh, I think three sets for sure. I mean, I am so convinced by Jo Konta. If it weren't for the draw, I would be predicting her to at least reach the final. If it weren't for that draw, I really would. I'm blown away by her, really, and I feel naive for being blown away because she was a semi-finalist here last year. She's the ninth seed, you know. She almost qualified for Singapore. She has done back-to-back fourth rounds at the US Open. This shouldn't be a surprise, but even with all of that, there's something different. There's something more about Jo Konta at this tournament, which I'm very, very impressed by.
Yeah, just to give you the details, she beat today the former world number one, Caroline Wozniacki, 6-3, 6-1, in about an hour and a quarter. She absolutely demolished her. And afterwards, she spoke to Catherine Whittaker.
Wow, Jo, congratulations. Another clinical, fantastic performance to get you through to the fourth round here for the second consecutive year. How pleased are you to put in that kind of performance against a former world number one?
I am very pleased. It definitely got tricky also at the end with the shade coming over the court. I think you could hear both of us. We weren't hitting as cleanly as the beginning of the match. But like you said, I knew going into the match against Caroline that I really had to win it. She was not going to give it to me. She's famous for being incredible at coming back in matches and really making opponents work very hard to come through against her. So I'm just very happy I was able to maintain my level and pull through in the end.
No breaks of your serve again today. Fantastic statistics on your service games. How good does it feel to have that kind of a weapon in your back pocket?
I'm very happy. Honestly, I don't think I look to rely on it. I try to take it as a bonus, but really just try to set up the point to try and dictate more than anything. But a couple of short points here and there, especially against a player like Caroline, it's always nice.
You've had what looked like a really tough draw on paper, three straight sets wins. How important is that for you as somebody that's looking to go deep into this tournament to get the job done quickly?
Well, you don't have much control over whether you're going to be playing two sets or three sets. So what I'm most happy about is just being solid what I need to be so far in my matches, and just playing also when I'm not feeling too good, just playing myself through it and into the matches. And like you said, maybe my on paper my draw, but every single player here is incredibly good, so there's no easy matches.
Well, you were fantastic today. Enjoy being in the second week again.
Thank you.
So Johanna Konta, Simon, you would have seen that match as well. I mean, I still watch her, and I sometimes think, am I going to wake up soon and she's not going to be this good? Because, you know, occasionally we've had the odd dodgy performance against Sevastova at the US Open last year, which was a disappointing defeat. I mean, these are, you know, I'm picking tiny little examples out here. At the moment, and this year, she's just awesome, really. I mean, she's not just winning these matches, she's beating quality players and comfortably.
Yeah, two quality players in the last fortnight, both of whom came off court and said, well, I couldn't have done anything. So they felt like the racket was taken out of their hands. And that's how you win slams. I mean, how often do you see somebody come through and kind of grind their way to the title? Even Kerber you know, has been hitting winners on her run to the two slams that she won last year. It wasn't like she did it purely by just sitting in. So if you look at her stats, she's won 96% of service games so far, which is way ahead of anyone, including Serena. If you look at her attack on the second serves of other players, she's kind of doing the Novak thing of ramming it back down their toes so that they're coming out of their service action and not being able to deal with the ball. It's just very solid, and she keeps on getting better. She's definitely improving technically all the time. I spoke to a couple of coaches, and actually Nick Cavaday, who coaches Aliage Bedenye, he talked about how she uses these big muscle groups. Like, he was saying it was something that Bedenye could learn from. Bedenye plays with his wrist. But if you use fine motor control, that's what goes on pressure points. If you're using big muscle groups, like the whole body, like if you see Konta using her hips, there's a huge torso rotation in every shot. It's more stable and more secure at those pressure moments. And so that's one reason she's gone from being a woman who did have mental meltdowns to a woman who's really, really solid.
Yeah. So that's Johanna Konta. She's now going to face Ekaterina Makarova, which is a slight adjustment, I think, to what most of us would have thought would have been her fourth round opponent. I certainly thought it was going to be Dominika Sibulkova. That was almost 3-hour epic that Sibulkova had with Makarova. And so they now face each other, Makarova and Konta, in the fourth round, which is a repeat of the same match a year ago, which Konta managed to win. So that's one of the matches that we're going to be seeing. Catherine's almost also been speaking to Marion Bartoli, the former Wimbledon champion, about the women's draw, and this is what she thinks of it all.
I think first and foremost we should talk about Jo Konta, because she played today, she won very convincingly today. That's three matches done, six sets won. She's looking in world-beating form, isn't she?
Absolutely, and for Jo, she started the year so well already, playing the final in Shenzhen, winning in Sydney, back it up in here. So obviously physically she's very much in shape. I love the fact that she wanted to make a move in her coaching team. She switched coaches and she took someone very experienced. Wim Fissett has been the coach of Kim Clijsters. She has been the coach of Sabine Lisicki, who I played in the final of Wimbledon. She's been the coach of Simona Halep. He has been with so many females. And I think for Jo, it's all about adding those little bits here and there to take her to the next level. She's been in the semifinal here in a Grand Slam before. She wants to get into that final and maybe winning a slam. Angelique Kerber won two last year. So I love the fact she won that as well. But she just played so much within herself. Everything she does is just perfect, but it's just also perfectly measured. Doesn't go for too much, just staying within herself, but just her attitude and the way she played, I just absolutely love it.
Yeah, she's a woman on a mission, isn't she? We have to point out, though, that she has a very tricky draw. Lurking potentially in the quarterfinals is a certain Serena Williams. What have you made of her form so far?
Well, I think it's a new Serena. I think for Serena Williams, the loss in Auckland was really a wake-up call for her. The way as well she lost that match, committing more than 80 unforced errors in one match. Just something that Serena Williams normally just never do. But, you know, that's the beauty of tennis. When you know, it's a windy day and you're not really fully into it, you can commit a lot of mistakes, even if you're a 22 Grand Slam champion. But I think Serena is the player that every time she enters a Grand Slam, she just becomes someone else. And I think she's on a mission. She played really well her two matches, which was a nice session. She played really well in the day session as well, which is something sometimes here she can struggle a little bit. Remember the one she lost against Makarova here, it was during the day, because the sun is quite bright and she doesn't like those conditions so much. But I think today she played extremely well against Gibbs, and she's going to be in to win those matches in two sets and looking to get into that final again. I think she wants to break the record of Margaret Court, obviously, but I think she wants more than that. I think she wants to get to 27, 28 Grand Slams. And who can stop her? I don't know. Maybe only herself.
Well, just a quick look, Marion, before we let you go, on the top half of the draw. Seeds dropping left, right and centre in the top half of the draw. Who for you are the contenders remaining there?
There's just so many new names. I mean, someone like Brody, for example, from America, Jennifer Brody, not Naomi, but someone we just didn't expect, who beat Heather Watson, saving match for now in the fourth round. I thought Alize Cornet had a really good draw when Radwanska lost, and it's Lucic Baroni, who never been in the second round of the Australian Open since 19 years. And now she's in round 16. So all those new names, all those new stories, that's what we love. But I'm picking Pliskova for that part of the draw. I think she just plays so well. She won in Brisbane. I think she's the one to look for.
So, Marion Bartoli with plenty to say, as always, about the women's draw. It's going to be fascinating over the next few days to see how it all unfolds.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hello, Tennis Podcast listeners. David here. Now, you might know that I love a bit of cooking, and I think I'm quite good at it. But if I'm honest, even I get fed up trying to work out what to do every night. That's where Home Chef comes in. Being able to put together a delicious meal without the long prep and the cook times, well, that's pretty cool. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. They have over 30 options a week and serve a variety of dietary needs, so you don't have to worry about what to make ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, but it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. Now, for a limited time, Home Chef is offering Tennis Podcast listeners 18 free meals plus free dessert for life and, of course, free shipping on your very first box. Go to homechef.com/tennis. That's homechef.com/tennis for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. You heard it right. Now, tomorrow, what do we think about the Brummy Murray? Huh? What do we think? Catherine Whittaker. Against Joe Wilfried Tsonga, not before 5:30 in the morning UK time, 4:30 local time in the afternoon on the Hisense Arena, which is where he played so wonderfully well against Bernard Tomic.
Well, can I say first and foremost, I'm gutted about the scheduling, as I'm sure you are as well. Why could they not have made that a not before 6:30? We're almost certainly, and unless things, yeah, we're almost certainly going to have Murray and Dan Evans on at the same time tomorrow. And that's,
do you think we will? I mean, Murray's third on, isn't he? I mean, there's probably going to be a bit of overlap.
They will overlap significantly. I mean, I don't think they will start and end at exactly the same time, but they will overlap enough that it will be
inconvenient
and annoying, and they will overlap during the daytime, so that all those people hoping to watch some Sunday morning British tennis, I mean, I know they'll still be watching Federer Nishikori, which is great, but they won't be watching Dan Evans.
The one I don't understand is why they didn't just start Evans 2 hours later and not before sort of 6:30, which would have been 7:30 in the morning in the UK, and yeah, that would have worked, I would have thought, but well, it hasn't happened.
Well, I completely agree. I entirely understand why Andy Murray is day session tomorrow. On paper, number one seed or not, him against Misha Zverev, who is a fascinating individual, incidentally.
Why?
Oh, his story is fantastic. He was outside the top 1,000 a couple of years ago, was coaching, was getting his private pilot's license, was, you know, contemplating a life beyond tennis. And actually, it was his younger brother, Sasha, making strides into the main tour and starting to do that transition from juniors to seniors. His employment of Jez Green, who Misha then started to work with as well. It sort of reignited his hunger, his desire, his made him, reminded him, I guess, what's great about tennis, all those corny things. And here he is. I think after this run, he will reach a career high ranking.
And he's 30 years old, isn't he? I mean, to put it into perspective, he has been knocking around for years. I remember when Alexander Zverev first came on the scene, and I remember trying to search him out at tournaments because I wanted to get an eye on what this guy was like. And I spotted Zverev in the draw I got the wrong one. I got what I regarded after that, and for the next about 3 years, I got the rubbish one who doesn't know how to play tennis because he always loses. He's got no ranking whatsoever, and he's I don't even know what he's doing on the circuit. That is what my view of Misha Zverev was. And then in the last 6 months, he has completely overturned that, and he is a glorious serve and volley, a throwback player. Andy Murray, I was told today by Leon Smith that Andy Murray has spent his afternoon or his morning in practice training with Jamie Murray's coach. Is it Alan McDonald, on serve volley drills from a left-hander to try to replicate what Zverev will come at him with tomorrow. I mean, it's going to be so much fun. It's, I think, probably the perfect kind of matchup for Andy Murray. He loves that sort of stuff, but crikey, it's a throwback.
Well, he loves that sort of stuff because that's what Jamie did to him every day when they were growing up. So he loves left-handed serves. He loves serve volleys. He loves a target. So in principle, he should be an absolute walk in the pot. But, I mean, Misha Zverev came into press yesterday and was one of the most charming interviewees I've ever met in a tennis centre. He seemed to have an amazing amount of proportion about tennis and life, having been in and out of it over the years. He was an exact contemporary of Murray's as a kid, and they knew the family pretty well because the Zverevs are also coaching parents, so they had something in common, and they used to hang out a bit together. And they played in the semi-final of the US Open Juniors that Murray won, and I think it was pretty one-sided. I haven't looked up the score, but he's a good on him type character, isn't he? I mean, it's a good on him type story.
And Andy actually, I think, spoke about how he would sometimes see Alex or Sasha, as he's known, knocking around the practice court when he was playing with Misha, and this kid was just hitting a few balls as well, and it was clear that there's just a love for the sport within that family. I think it's a great story that Misha's done what he's done. He's also the guy who was at the other end of the net when Nick Kyrgios had his total meltdown in Shanghai. And to be fair, I mean, he was so decent about that. I mean, he could have been very bitter in terms of the way all the headlines were taken away from him, but you know, he was actually backing Nick Kyrgios up, which on that particular day was pretty hard to have done. Anyway, enough of that. So, I mean, I can't see Murray losing. I think Murray will win. Dan Evans, what do you think about him?
Well, I'm just quite impressed by your Brummy Murray line. Is that an original lawism, or and can I use it in the paper? That's what I want to know.
Yes, it is a lawism, and I did text it to you, I think, last night, and I was quite disappointed when you didn't remark upon it at the time. But now that you've heard it again, Simon, and do check your messages and you will see that. And I was slightly worried that you would then use it before I'd managed to get it out there when I realised, actually, that was quite good. But anyway.
Don't tell anyone else.
So, yeah, the Brummy Murray, Dan Evans, Dangerous Dan, he's going to be in action. Daniel, what do you think?
Well, yeah, we think that Songa is a better opponent for him than it could have been Jack Sock, who would have got it high, and then single-handed backhands are in trouble. So Songa's backhand is as flat as a pancake, and there's no spin on it whatsoever, which is good for Dan. The Songa forehand, well, that's a weapon and a serve. But look, he's defused two big serves. Tomic is an underrated server as well as Cilic so far to get to this stage. So he's second favourite, I mean, against a guy with Songa's experience.
What's going to happen?
Look, he's going to push him. I think he'll probably lose in four, but he could do better than that.
I agree.
He's going to lose in four.
Probably, but could do better than that.
I think he's going to win. There we are. That's that. And then there's Roger Federer against Kei Nishikori. I mean, it's not even fair to ask Simon, is it? What do you think, Catherine?
I think Federer is going to win, maybe, possibly.
Yeah, he's going to win. Federer will win that. No, Nishikori doesn't really like playing Federer, I don't think.
He certainly doesn't like playing Federer apart from Nadal.
Oh, that's a good question. I think Djokovic does these days.
What these days with his okay, what, he's having the flight home to serve.
Well, no, he's having a bad time of things, as we know. But I mean, if you look at their record recently, I mean, this time a year ago, he absolutely destroyed Federer, and Federer was playing all right. I tell you what, we talk a lot about Murray. If it got to it, night match between Federer and Murray. Federer has got an amazing record recently against Murray, hasn't he? I mean, we're talking a fair way off here. But.
It's not that far off. It's only two rounds off, isn't it?
Oh, it is, isn't it?
Two rounds off.
And that's the whole point about him being the 17th seed. But we did mention this earlier in the, I think in our preview podcast, that Federer has beaten Murray on every occasion but one in slams, with that one coming in 2013, I think, in the semi-final here.
Yes. I give you, ladies and gentlemen, well, British ladies and gentlemen, the prospect of, in a 48-hour period, Evans, Wawrinka, Murray, Federer, Conta, Serena.
Crikey. I don't think I can cope. Simon Briggs is getting really pumped up. Seems like he's got a headache at the sheer thought of it.
Because that's a lot. All other sports.
That's a lot of words, isn't it?
That's a lot of words. Oh, my God. Cancel all dinners. That's the problem.
Indeed. Well, listen, it's all coming up tomorrow. We've got the Brummy Murray Dangerous Dan Evans in action against Joe Wilfried Tsonga, not before 5:30 a.m. on the Hisense Arena. We've got Andy Murray in action on the Rod Laver Arena before that. Evening session is Angelique Kerber involved. Who's she playing? I can't even remember now. Angelique Kerber's playing for sure.
Coco Vandeweghe.
That's very well done, Catherine. And we've also got Roger Federer against Kei Nishikori. Other matches too. I can't really remember them all, to be quite honest. But anyway.
Margaret is on Margaret Court Arena. Who else is on Margaret Court? Somebody.
Don't know. Anyway, it's what are you showing
probably
me?
Probably somebody good.
I'm showing you the text that I received this morning, and now I understand why I didn't register it, because I think I'd just woken up. wasn't that about 11 o'clock or something?
I don't know. Everything feels a bit like a twilight zone at this tournament, doesn't it? You know, I mean, you go to bed at 4 a.m, you wake up for a few hours, then you try and get a nap in, but it doesn't happen really.
You're producing lorisms at all times of the day, aren't you, David?
I do try. Anyway, thank you all for listening to the Tennis Podcast, brought to you in association with The Telegraph. Read Simon's millions of words that he's going to have to write over the next few days. And Catherine, on the telly, on Eurosport, don't forget you can get a year's subscription to the Eurosport player in the UK only for $19.99. That'll include three of the slams, the French Open, the US Open, and of course this one too, if you'd like to do that on the Eurosport player. Hold on, Catherine.
Four of the slams,
of course, because they've got highlights as well, haven't they, to Wimbledon.
Highlights and live coverage of both finals.
Goodness me, Catherine, where's it go with all the information? We will be back with another Tennis Podcast tomorrow. We'll speak to you then.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win. And support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.